everyone. I'm Arlene Dickinson. Thanks for joining me on my podcast.
I have been a longtime partner of TELUS because I value the support they provide to both local businesses and entrepreneurs. Recently, TELUS launched Stand With Owners. It's an initiative that's targeted to support Canadian small businesses during COVID-19 because now more than ever, we could all use a bit of help. And that's why TELUS and I have partnered to provide all of my listeners with an exclusive limited time offer. Right now, if you bring your business to TELUS, you can receive 20% off a mobility plan for business, and you also get the first 3 months free. That's right, free. Visit telus.com/reinvention to redeem this offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Reinvention. Today, Arlene chats with Canada's queen of R&B, Julie Black. Taking us back to life before the Platinum Records, Juno Awards, and international fame, Julie opens up on how her mom has been the motivation to achieve all the pinnacles she has set out to reach. Instilled with the idea that if you can't reinvent, you should invent, Julie is a living example of what hard work and determination yields. From not having toys to bring to show and tell as a child, to being the support beam for her family as the youngest of nine, Julie never viewed her current situation as her final destination, but rather a chance to chart a new path to her goal.
Julie, it's so nice to talk to you again. I think the last time we spoke, I had ordered some rum cakes that you sent to me in tins that your mom had made.
Yes, they're the Mama Black's Jamaican rum cake. I think you ordered about 8 of them. I was like, don't eat and drive, honey. Don't eat and drive.
I gave them as gifts and people absolutely raved about them. They absolutely loved them. They were so good.
Yeah, we miss mom. That was her thing. And you know what? She didn't measure anything, so no one knows how to make it. So it is what it is.
So you need to actually sit beside her next time she makes them and just kind of write things down while she's not looking, right?
Well, we wish we did. Mom passed in 2017.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. 81 years. And so, yeah, she lived a beautiful, full life. And interestingly enough, I often say that her last breath became my first breath. And that's what created my reinvention. I'm so happy you asked me to be here because it's so timely. And I have so much just yumminess inside of me as a result of that pain turning to purpose, turning to passion.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about it. Tell me about that experience. I first of all, I was unaware that she had passed, and I'm very sorry to hear that because I know she was a huge influence in your life.
Yeah.
But why don't we go back in time and just talk a little bit about you and your life and kind of what's taken you where you are today. I'm really curious to hear about the journey you've been on.
Oh my goodness. The journey has been exactly that, being present for all things that's happening around me. When mom took sick in late 2016, early 2017, I was in the middle of record company wars and bad relationship wars. And, you know, I realized as mom became my priority, I was her primary caregiver, my emotional priorities just changed in an instant, which let me realize that I had choice. That these emotions I was feeling and enduring and allowing myself to go through and sometimes get stuck in was a result of being the thought more than the thinker. Like, not to get too deep with it, but I was like, I actually came to me like, Julie, are you the thought or are you the thinker? Are you the thought or are you the thinker? And this is as I'm going to appointments with my mom. You know, she passed from pancreatic cancer. It came like a thief in the night, the most healthy woman I ever knew. But a good friend of mine who was a holistic nutritionist said, well, Julie, the pancreas is the organ of joy. And I was like, ooh. And then I started to look into what was mom experiencing that she shared with me emotionally that, you know, could have brought her to that place. Either way, as a result of mom passing and grief, that was the hardest thing I've ever experienced in my life. I was in a place where I was like, okay, you're going to let this pin you down? Are you going to really let this pin you down, Julie? And I'm about quotes and mantras. And as I was eating chips and drinking all types of amaretto and 7-Up and wine, and after being vegan for 4 years, really healthy, I made a choice to start eating bad and drinking and being a victim. And I just heard, don't let life pin you down before you decide to get up. Don't let grief pin you down before you decide to get up. Don't let heartbreak pin you down before you decide to get up. Don't let everything, all the things that I was experiencing, from weight gain, and it just said, don't let that pin you down. Okay, goosebumps. Before you decide to get up. So I got up. I was like, all right. My mom used to say, Jew, she called me Jew, you can't go further than the ground. When you hit the ground, lay on your back and look up. Just look up and surrender, because that's the direction you're going in now. And I just looked up and I said, I started moving, getting into health, more of my health and wellness. And here I am, like almost 3 years later, a movement was born called 100 Strong and Sexy. And I'm the founder of that thing.
That's awesome. Well, I want to talk about that in a second, but just tell me about that, because listen, my mom is 89 and I'm dealing with, you know, similar types of issues. And as many of us are dealing with parents who are either ill or just getting older and struggling with healthcare. And you do become this, as you said, the caregiver. And it's a very interesting role reversal where you're used to your parents helping take care of you. And suddenly you're taking care of them. And they tend to regress a little bit in terms of their thinking. They become a younger in their minds. And I don't know what your mom's journey was. Mm-hmm. She has cancer. So it's a different journey for sure. But I find that it's really hard not to, as you just said, to kind of get sucked into it and let it just overwhelm you. And yet you describe it as you were there, but then you were on the ground looking up and got up. How did you get yourself up? Because many people, Julie, I think, really struggle with it. We get in these moments, we start treating ourselves badly because we're the caregivers, so we don't think about ourselves. We're not spending time worrying about whether, you know, we're healthy. We're so concerned about other people's health, which is, a tendency of women in general. So how did you get the courage and the strength? Where did you find that from to be able to recognize that you were in a bad place, that you had gained weight, that you weren't taking care of yourself, that you were struggling to, you know, just deal with life? How did you find the strength?
That's an amazing question. I'm so happy I could answer that question from where I sit now, because my mom was 81 when she passed away, and I was 40. I'm 42 now. And so it came to me that, okay, if I get my mom's lifespan, even if I get hers, then this is my birthday.
Yeah.
Then I get another 40 years to do it better.
Yeah.
And I didn't focus on outcome. It was just literally one moment at a time. I'm a woman of faith, so prayer played a big role. But not prayer. It wasn't, I had to unlearn a lot of the religion, how I was raised, and just have a conversation with this brilliant energy source that put the stars in the sky and that allows my lungs to expand. I know that I don't say blink and then blink. There's some energy that lets me blink and swallow my food. And it got that, I got that micro with it, Arlene. Like, okay, so Julie, be where your feet are. Do you feel the ground under your feet? I feel the ground under my feet. I'm alive. And gratitude, I just started being grateful for being alive. I'm alive. I'm the youngest of 9 too. And so as I was caring for mom, I kind of became the oldest one. All of my siblings relied on me, not to mention I'm an entrepreneur, so I had the time. So everything really fell on me. And then I started to, rather than look at all of the pressure I went through and focus on the anger, because there was lots of anger and resentment. I planned the funeral. People asked me to produce funerals after that because it was a band, it was steel pan. My mom's video, she eulogized herself because I had all her videos and voice notes. I interviewed her for a year before she passed, and all of her wisdom was just amplified in the church. I realized I had to really not only continue my mom's legacy, but I wanted to really know for myself, what was my legacy going to be? How am I going to cement my legacy? And I recognized it had nothing to do with the stage and everything to do with first going to the altar, whatever that altar is. And when I think about an altar, I think about sacrifice. I think about confession. I think about offering, right? And so from that place of despair, I started to confess that this is not my greatest self. No, I'm better than this. I kept saying I'm better than the life that I've been living. I'm better than the choices I've been making. I'm better than this. I'm better than this. And it you know, there's a lot of kind of new age teaching, which I subscribe to, about words and, you know, what you believe is what you become. And so many people, I guess, don't subscribe to it long enough to see it take root. And I just really started to declare I'm better than this. I'm greater than this. For the sake of, I said, God, for the sake of your reputation, fix me. Because as you fix me, I will speak. I'll speak on everything that I've done and all, how you've helped me. God, energy, Jesus, whatever. Just fix me because I have a platform and I'm willing to be vulnerable. I'm willing to share my, the decisions I made, because my mom also left nuggets with me saying, Jew, you didn't make mistakes. You don't make mistakes. We don't make mistakes. After the age of understanding, you make decisions. Hmm. So decide your, in the Jamaican way, she'd be like, you decide your mind, decide, make a decision. And I start to decide differently.
I love what, there is something so profound in we don't make mistakes, we make decisions. Because what that basically says to people is you have choices, and your choice might be the wrong choice. You might actually decide to do something that isn't good for you or isn't going to take you the road down the road you want to go down. But you made that decision and you get a choice to make another decision, which is to change the road you're on and to think about it differently. And so instead of thinking about it as mistakes, we made perhaps the wrong choice. We made a poor choice, but it was still a choice, you know? And yeah. So there's something about that that frees us from worrying about making mistakes and defining ourselves by, oh, I did something wrong versus I chose wrong and I can choose better next time.
That's right. I have to say this because you mentioned the road. And so I often, when I especially mentor young girls and even women, I use a GPS analogy. When we're driving with Google Maps or any sort of GPS, we make the wrong turn. It doesn't say, you know, hey, stupid, why'd you make that left turn? Hey, you dummy, what the hell's wrong with you, Julie? Did you not, why did, come on. No, it just says recalculate. And that's what I subscribe to that for myself. And I say, make a U-turn. And to your point, you could always make another decision, every day, every moment, every second.
The wisdom your mom left you is, as I said, it's profound, because often we don't listen to our elders the way we really should. I mean, we think they talk in, you know, kind of these
parables.
And yeah, they're always got a little saying about something and you kind of brush it off. And then it's only when you're older that you realize, holy smokes, they were so right about the basic stuff and the basic principles that we all need to adhere to, which is really that notion of believing in yourself. And reinvention really is about starting with this idea of looking back at your life and understanding where you've come from in order to move forward. And we don't, as humans, like doing that. We don't like looking back at the past because it can be ugly and it can be disappointing and it can be scary to look back. But if we don't understand where you've come from, you can't really move forward, because that past is always going to be a part of who you are, right?
Correct. And, you know, lately, especially over COVID, these past 7 months, it's been brilliant. It's been, I call it Corona creativity. It's the first time I've been able to really sit and be this creative without any sort of expected outcome, right? And so realizing that being able to sit and become, I started to think about my achievements. And so rather than make a vision board, because I have vision boards, I made vision boards. You are my vision board, you know. You are my vision board before I interviewed you on the Gian show. And you ended up. Yeah, I'm serious. True story.
That's awesome.
True story. Yeah. So I made these vision boards, kind of like the Oprah Winfrey way and, you know, all this stuff. And then I looked at it and I was like, okay, I got the car. I met Arlene and, you know, all these things, right? It's true. But then I'm sitting and there's a speaker, I think his name is Gary Assaraf. I think it's Assaraf. Is it Gary? He was in The Secret. Anyway, he speaks about making an achievement board. And because to your point, I was like, I won an award or I accomplished something. What's next? And being disappointed when the next didn't happen the way I thought it should, or if it ever at all. So as I start to create my achievement board, I'm talking about, you know, whether I got a participation in track and field in grade 2, whether anything that I felt was an achievement to me, I started putting it on this board. And those days when I started to feel less than or not good enough, I'd look at my achievement board. Like, I had awards in my locker. I had sold my house, bought a condo, and I put all the stuff in my locker. It was like there was shame or something, like, oh, those are old, or, you know, da da da. And I pulled them out. It's like, you know what? I actually did that already. And when those achievements happened, I didn't intend on them happening. It was a sheer work ethic, passion, you know, I was committed. And so that's what I do now. I haven't been focusing on a vision board lately. Because if you don't believe what's on the board, what's the point? It's just arts and craft.
It's interesting to me because, you know, you're in an industry as a musician, you're in an industry as an artist, I guess, is a probably broader, better way to characterize you. Many artists attribute their success to being in the States. You know, they become popular in the United States. So they think about success as, I don't get successful unless I'm successful in the United States. And so they get their upbringing and their training and their start in Canada. So they do all the things in this country, you know, and then they take that and then they move south. And you didn't, which I find, first of all, thank you for not doing that. You stayed and you did it all here. And I love that because, Julie, like I think many artists today are now following in your footsteps and they're recognizing that you can have a very successful career here. It is, it definitely, you were leading the way and it probably was a much harder road for you to take as a result of leading the way and being that trailblazer. But what do you think has helped change the shift, like help that shift? And did we only just recently realize that it's Canada's a good place or a cool place to be an artist from? Like, you know, think about Drake, you think about many of the artists that are now defining Canada as home as opposed to the United States as home, even though they're Canadian.
Right.
What do you think changed that? What do you think, where do you think that shift came from? Did it come from people like you who are willing to say, I'm going to do
it? Well, I remember when I decided to come back home because I moved to America. I was living in LA in the early 2000s, signed to MCA, which was under Universal. And I realized there were some mergers and stuff, but I had the choice to stay over there and kind of grind and hustle and be one of 300 million or come home and build business and really become an entrepreneur. And it was a decision that many of my peers thought was crazy because I had offers. I back to my mom and my dad. They had me really later on in life. And so I just think I had a lot of that wisdom to own your destiny, own your art. I have a tattoo that says own your art. I knew it was going to be a struggle. But my mom said to me, you can't get to the top of a mountain climbing on a smooth surface. And so she just was like, yeah, just use the bumps. And through those bumps, I met people and it just became kind of fun. Even in the hard days, I found the bright spots. So every victory, big or small, is a victory for me. I recognize that now, even still, like many of the artists who've had international acclaim, who call Canada home, have still had international acclaim first, to have it be global in that way. But to your point, I think that we're redefining success. And I start to think for me, and I think a lot of other artists, when you think about our lives, like what is success? Do we want to have 5 vacations? Do we want to have a house, a condo, and a car? Do you want to have a cottage? Like the Canadian way is a lot different. I think that we're embracing our culture, like the Canadian culture. You know, even though there's really like a star system, people still will celebrate you and acknowledge your art, but they're not going to fall out and faint over you, you know? But I think that's, there's more so of a support system. And now I think that the young generation, the younger generation, because I'm young still, girlfriend, realizing that being an entrepreneur is key. Building business is key. Having a business is key. There's the day of advances and I was in the glory days of them just kind of throwing money at you and artist development. But being able to define your destiny, connect with your fans, build following, and build e-commerce. Like it's just a new day.
And you can do that from anywhere, which I love. I mean, when you, artists, I think, people don't think about artists as entrepreneurs. And in fact, that's exactly what you are. I mean, you have to, just like I think about athletes are entrepreneurs. I mean, you're taking your skill and talent and you're putting it out there and you're trying to scale it and grow it and become larger than you as an individual are. And I love that you have thought about it from an entrepreneurial perspective and said to yourself, I can do it from anywhere. I mean, you did go to the States, but you literally built your career for the most part.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%.
And I love that you're leading that charge in that way. But Julie, I also know that it's hard because it's so tempting. You know, I've had offers to go to the States just in, from a business perspective, and I can't do it. I just don't. And it's not to put down anybody who has, because, you know, there's lots of people who have gone on to go to the U.S. who have then come back to contribute to Canadian culture and our zeitgeist in their own way. So I appreciate that you have to kind of go where the market is and you have to build it. But I do love that. I think Canada's getting its mojo in a different way now, where we're saying, wait a minute, I can live in this beautiful country and yet still be on the world stage.
That's right.
There's the ability to do that now with the internet and with, you know, the opportunity that globalization has created to be able to take your voice and have it seen and heard anywhere. And I just want to talk about your voice for a minute, because you have, I'm just going to go back to when you were getting the leading role in Caroline or Change, right?
Mm.
So before you accepted that leading role, I understand that you turned down the invitation due to fear about dealing with vocal changes.
Yes, 100%. First of all, being offered such a Goliath of a role when I've always wanted to do musical theater, and I actually did a masterclass at Sheridan College about, you know, basically, it'll find you when it's time. Like, so, cause I can't sight read. I don't do any, I just all by ear. Right. So I'm not trained.
Wow.
So I don't read sheet music. I don't learn everything by ear. And so where I wanted to go to Juilliard and Columbia and Berkeley and Sheridan, that was my roadblock, that I couldn't sight read. And so to have Caroline come my way and to look at these 29 songs and dialogue, I was afraid, full fear, and I was going through vocal challenges. I was going through some changes that was brought on by the kind of like residual grief. People don't realize where stress and grief and anxiety, how it could sit, where it manifests. And for me, it manifested in my voice. So I've always had enough reserve to serve. I often say, I get on stage and I'll bang through it, but after, I can't sing for 3 days. That's what it was in the past. And so they didn't have an understudy for me, that I knew I was going to have to learn all these songs. And so I was just like, nah, sorry, too hard. And finally, as I really got to know Carol, they're like, just sit with it over the holidays. This was 2018, December 2018. I said, sit with it over the holidays. I brought it to my family and we started to share stories about mom, like coming to Canada as a domestic. Basically, Caroline was my mom's best friend, Miss Jenny, and her friend in the theater, in the production, was my mom. And so it's like, oh my gosh, really? And so I asked them, would they give me a year of their time? The musical director, Reza, and the director, Robert McQueen. And it wasn't about the money. I often say to people, if there's value, then there's currency. And I knew the value of being one-on-one with those two men for the year would turn me in. And Elaine Overholt too, I signed on with her to be my vocal coach. And that was my therapy. That was the therapy I needed to heal, especially, you know, with mom passing away and realizing that we didn't know that Black Lives Matter was coming around the bend. This whole story takes place in 1967, Louisiana. And the story is just so relevant with taking down Confederate flags and statues, and it's the exact same thing that's happening now. And we did this piece in February, pre-George Floyd, pre-everything. So, but to come full circle, I digress. I had two vocal surgeries while rehearsing that I didn't tell them about. And so this was sheer, like, full faith, discipline, health, wellness. I had a vocal diet, you know, meal plans, sleep, rest. I was an athlete. I was basically a musical athlete, and still, to this day, I'm just so grateful, so grateful, because the joy, it's really created joy as my GPS. I say it all the time, joy is my GPS, and it's taken me places and it's bringing me joy. Yeah,
I really love that you made the decision to go ahead with it, because I think that your positive headspace is so vital to being able to pursue a goal. Right? Like, if you don't have that positive headspace, it's very difficult to get yourself out of the negativity and get yourself moving forward. And so do you attribute much of your life to, and your life decisions to, the positive headspace that you have, no matter what, that you can come out of the bad stuff and find the good?
Oh, 100%. And even when I'm not feeling the greatest, well, like what we spoke about earlier, it's just choosing another thought. My mom always told us, what you believe is what you become. The power of life and death lie in the tongue. Like, she kept saying, the power of life and death lie in the tongue. The power of life and death lie in the tongue. So that's been in my cells since I was probably 6 years old. I knew that scripture. And it's just so powerful when you start to exude, like, live your joy. And it doesn't have to do with people, places, or things.
Well, you talked at that point in making that decision to do Carolina Change, you talked about, you told yourself to change your mind and change your life. And so you literally did flip that switch to say, if I don't change my mind about the way I'm thinking, the fear I have about my voice, the fear I have about the role, the fear I have about, you know, doing this at a time in my life when I'm still grieving, all these things that you were going through, you still realize that you had to change the way you were thinking in order to be able to move forward. And there's such a lesson there. I talk a lot about that in the book on reinvention, that there's such a lesson there for people to understand, that you have to start saying these things out loud. You say them to yourselves, and then you have to say them out loud. You have to portray and project that you're going to go ahead. I spoke with Randy Bachman a little bit ago in an episode.
Oh, Randy, he's awesome.
I know, who also, by the way, does not read music. And does everything, like, so many similarities to what you're saying, Julie, about an attitude and an approach to life, even when you're at your darkest moments, being able to still go forward and realize that you have one life to live, and putting that out there and recognizing that you can be all you want to be. But it's very difficult. I don't want to in any way suggest that it's an easy thing to do, because it takes a lot of strength to be able to push through when things are bad. And right now, you know, when we talk about that, and I think it'd be remiss not to talk about it. You mentioned Black Lives Matter, and I do want to talk about that. How has that impacted you? Like, how are you feeling right now in the middle of this movement, which is such a critical movement and so important to talk about? How are you feeling about it all?
Yeah. How am I feeling on today? Every day is different.
Yeah.
And I've asked my friends, especially my non-Black friends, white friends, to ask me just, how are you today? So I don't give them a broad stroke. I'm fine. I'll let them know how I am in the day, in the moment. I recognize that this is where I can really lean on my experience, wisdom. I think that it's helped us do away with all the isms, like the ageism, the classism, all of those isms. I think it's been a positive, especially in the business that I tend to dwell in. Now it's like, you know, there was a moment in time where if you weren't of a certain age, you weren't even getting the call. And now this is just like, this is a total reset detox. You know, I've lost friendships as a result. I've had a couple
really
close white friends it's just really been hard for them to sit in the discomfort. And for about a month, I was asked over and over again, like, what can I do? How can I be a better friend? How can, you know, and all this stuff. And then finally, I just was like, you know, I really need you to teach me remorse. Rather than learning about my Blackness, I have you teach me about your whiteness. Teach me about how you were raised. And, you know, I just started asking certain questions, like, hey, could you bring a Black guy home? Could you, like, things that we never spoke about before. Right, so it's like, now that everything's on the table, let's just talk and listen, learn, and take action. And so there's been some grieving in that regard, where it's some friends have decided to stay in the majority and stay comfortable in that area. And so I had to make a decision now: do I coddle, overcompensate, keep reaching out? And I made a decision to just sit back. And let life happen. You know, there's that aspect on a personal tip, but I've also had a lot of beautiful conversations, period, point blank, and being able to speak with different corporations and people who I have many friends in various sectors. It's like, okay, well, Julie, what do you think about this? Asking my opinion, which I could appreciate, and being willing to, like, actually take action or bring this back, you know. So it's a time like never before. We're laying in the pages of history. And I say to people, like, someone's going to study us. Like we study other history. So how do you want to be studied? Where do you want to, what mark do you want to leave? You know, I think that we have to be mindful of throwing the allyship title around. I think many have said, just raised their hand, made a donation, or says, I'm an ally now, or sent a product. Like, I'm like, allyship, it's not a one-day thing. It's not a one-product thing. It's not a, like, this is like, this is life. Let's lock elbows for what we would consider a lifetime.
For the long-term journey.
For the long-term, right.
Right, and that's, I believe that is what's missing. You know, it's funny, there was so much noise about it at the beginning, and then you start to see, like, every movement, you know, starts to, you know, peter out, and I, you know, it's interesting. I will say that I've been thinking a lot about what can I do, what can I do, what can I do, how can I be better, and, you know, I've been taking an artist a month to talk about on my social media feeds, and that has been interesting for me, because I've started to open my eyes up to just how much influence that I have had in my life from the Black community, you know, and from, I mean, I'm from South Africa, so I was raised in a very volatile nation that during apartheid. So there was all this noise, but we were raised very, my father did and my mother did an amazing job of always talking to us about equality, not just in color, but in gender and in every aspect, that, you know, we have people the same, because people are the same. We all, you know, when we die, we're all the same, right? We all go back to the earth. And so I'm very grateful that I was raised that way, but yet I know that I still have had a privilege that only white people have had. And I didn't even recognize it myself until this all came out. And I'm so grateful to voices like yours and other Black leaders who have been prepared to stand up and talk about it and be vulnerable and open and caring and also not willing to take it all on themselves, because you make a great point about you shouldn't have to take it all on.
Yeah.
Not just your job, all of our jobs, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And realizing that, and I speak to as far as the Black community is, you know, we could be angry, but not in rage. Like, we also have a responsibility to really, to govern, to really think about going back, to think about what we're thinking about. What do we really want to say? Are we responding or are we reacting? Do we need to take a moment? Do we need some sleep? Are we eating well? Are you hydrated? Like, it's all of it. Did you have a big bowel movement? Like, what's up? Everything. We need it all. That's real, for real. You know? And just love, love, love. I said to somebody recently, they're like, oh, you're also berries and cherries. I said, yeah, call me a tree hugger, hippie, Jesus sandals wearing. Meet me on today. I'm not the Julie of 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. This is the Julie right now. Meet me where I am, and I'm open, and I'm vulnerable, and I'm all of these things that some, and I'm delicate too, and I'm fragile as well. Handle me with care. Yeah. This all 6-foot glamazon, handle me with care as well. I have feelings, you know, and sometimes the strong ones aren't asked how we're doing, or Julie's got it, don't worry, you know, or call Julie, she'll, all of a sudden we're a fixer. And I often say, you know, like, who's the teacher's teacher? Who's the pastor's pastor? You know, who's the nurse's nurse? Like, everybody needs care.
Well, you talked about the fact that you were the youngest of 9 kids and you became the caregiver for your mom. And that is a reflection of the fact that you do portray yourself as being in control and being, you know, the person who people can lean on and turn to. But I've lived that role myself. I really relate to what you just said, because you end up being the person that's always being looked to for the solution and the strength. And sometimes you don't feel it. Sometimes you just want to sit in a room, pull the covers over your head, and cry your eyes out because you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And that, being willing to be vulnerable and admit that, I think is hard for a strong person to do, but it actually... And I've talked about this in the past. I think it's very freeing that when you do admit that you struggle sometimes and that you aren't always strong and that you are in the moment and that you have strengths and weaknesses, then you find the ability to move on in a different way.
Yeah. You get to witness your life. Lately, I just started new to it. I'm starting some meditation.
Oh, how are you liking it?
You know, so I keep falling asleep. So I don't know if that's a thing, but what I can realize, what's really helped me pivot to that area is I'm a praying woman, which is outward. Out. But when am I going to stop? I said, conversation's a two-way street. So even if at the very least, the meditation brings me to just be silent and witness my thoughts, then that's a big breakthrough for me. And actually, the big breakthrough is I'm always thinking about the cellulite on my right leg. I promise you, and I've been with
it. Oh, come on, back up.
Sounds random.
But in your meditation, that's what's coming to your head?
Yeah. This fat, the fat patch has come up. I'm like, this fat patch has actually been on replay since high school. And people look at my body in a different way, but I see this fat patch. And I'm thinking about things of what should I do, what squat, what deadlift, and should I do ballet and bar and whatever. And someone recently just said, Julie, just be a witness. And I had a big breakthrough on that. Big breakthrough. Like 2 days ago, I was like, wow, that comes up a lot, eh? Okay, I wonder why. So,
in a past interview, you mentioned that when you were growing up with your family, you couldn't afford Cabbage Patch Kids or Barbie dolls for your show and tell.
Terrible, yes.
So you brought your voice. And so as a child, you know, I think as a child, we're all greatly influenced by our schoolmates and we want to fit in. So not having what everyone else has does leave a mark. And it did for me. I grew up very poor as well. So do you think that actually has helped form our ability to take success and put it in context of what really matters right now, that we kind of look at and go, because I'm back to where I was when I had no money. I'm back to, I understand, for those who are listening, I understand that I'm very privileged. I have done well in life and I get that. But what matters to me is really basic things. Like I used to can because we couldn't afford to go to the grocery store, so I had to can. Now I'm canning because I really find joy in it.
Yeah.
Are you finding that too with yourself? Like money's not.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Arlene. And I get hype even thinking about it because when COVID first hit and everybody didn't know what was happening, everyone's on lockdown, I took to Instagram and my cousin, who's a teacher, he was on lockdown too. I was like, hey, his name's Courtney. I said, why don't you get on Instagram Live and play piano? Because he plays piano for me. He's in my band. And we were singing in church when we were little, right? So I said, why don't you play piano where you are? We'll get on Instagram Live because you could do two people. And we birthed this thing called Wake and Worship. And it was like, don't cancel your commute. There was no money. There was no, we were literally on there singing, reading, you know, a daily affirmation thingy. And that was just the most beautiful thing. It was like, I wake up with this voice. I wasn't worrying about the pitch, the sound. And it was perfect because I wasn't thinking about that. And now, to your point, like I'm going to pivot for a second. Leanne Rimes, I saw her do a speech at the Summit of Greatness last year, and it was her first keynote, and she said one thing that stuck with me for the rest of my life. And she said, my voice was always used to heal others, but I had to learn how to use it to heal myself.
Mm. Well,
yeah.
Again, how so true, right?
Yeah. Again,
caregiver, giving to everyone else, but not giving to yourself.
Yeah. So every time I sing, every time I'm in the car, I hum, like I give my own self goosebumps. It's like, wow, this is ability that now when it comes out of my mouth, I'm so grateful. It's healthy and it's a healing tool. And who does everybody sings? Whether it's in the shower or this, that, but like I could sing like, wow, I actually could do this. I very, very well. And think like affluence. Things are coming my way. People tend to project on artists because of arts and entertainment right now. It must be really hard. A lady sent me a message yesterday. I'm so sorry. Out the blue, you know. So sorry. Things must be so hard. And, you know, let me know how I can help. I'm like, things are popping. This is the best time of my life. I mean, it's so funny. I have a song called Running. 11 years ago, we wrote it. That song has been licensed probably 8 times since March. And
wow.
I'm just sitting back. Because whether it's election, whether it's Run for the Cure, whether it's they use it for the George Floyd campaign, I'm sitting there like this song that I wrote from my heart, 2009, from my heart, has legs. And it's just, I'm in the best place in my life. Best space in my life. But I will say, though, that it's going back to mom,
when she it's the years when I was having a tough time. Like, I lost everything. Then I had minus 13 cents in my bank account, nothing. But it let me see who was really for me and not for me, not to mention, to your point, what's success? How do I define success? I never went hungry, even with minus 13. I had, my stomach was always full. I was camped out with my mom and family. I was able to truly see who was about who I am versus what I did. And all of that stuff. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, this is life. This is great. I wish we were still on lockdown. I'm not gonna lie. I love it.
Well, you're so inspirational. And I know you started, I want to give you a few moments to talk about 100 Strong and Sexy, because I know this is something you started as very near. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Let people know what you're doing there.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? 100 Strong and Sexy, it's really about community. It's a women's wellness organization. With birth after my mom passed. You know, it's just went on this 100-day journey, August 1st, 2018 to November 8th, it landed on my birthday, go figure, the last day. If that's not a sign, I don't know. And 56 women came on this 100-day challenge, eat well, work out, sleep, all that stuff. And I noticed that the women who joined were like, you know, got off thyroid medicine and antidepressants and just things. It's like, wow, this is, we have medicine inside of us. So, you know, fast forward, I kept doing it. I looped it around, and now there's been like about 700 plus women who have done the program. And now, but it's the anchor of 100 Strong and Sexy are the areas of my life where I didn't have support. So I didn't have a bereavement group that kind of resonated with me. You know, when I looked for bereavement, it was more so the older white women who lost their husbands, or mothers against drunk driving, or the opioid crisis. There was nothing that I could resonate with. So I started a bereavement group called In the Arms of an Angel, for people who've lost their parents, et cetera. So that's a part of 100 Strong and Sexy.
Okay.
There's a plant forward group. I've been a vegan for all these years, but like, we don't have to eat cardboard. Let's make it fun. You know, there's something called the business booster, which I want to actually talk to you about. Hint, hint. There's a lot of young entrepreneurs, right? Who just the do's and the don'ts. They don't really know what to do, but they're excited to launch a business. And so through 100 Strong and Sexy, we're supporting women. Whether you're making belly beads or whether you're an event planner, it doesn't matter. It all matters. And so we're doing that. There's just so much. Like, it's blown my mind, because I realized that truly unity is strength. Like, unity is strength. Our motto is unity is strength. Community is our currency. And here I am almost 3 years later with some brilliant women, all walks of life. The youngest is 12, the oldest is 70. And we work out and we do events, and it's just, I'm in love with this thing that I'm a member. It's not just a business I launched and just hand off. And now it's really growing, and I have a team and I have a board, and you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like it's truly, I've truly been reinvented through 100 Strong and Sexy. Really and truly.
You can tell, Julie, like, you, I think about when we first met, when we were doing the show on Canada Reads together,
yeah.
Which yeah. I lost to, and I don't want to talk about too much. still haven't gotten over it, but that's okay. I will one day.
It's okay. You'll choose to get over it soon.
But I think about who we both were then and how time has really given and influenced us in many ways. And I have to tell you, I'm really glad we reconnected. I feel I loved your energy then. I love your energy now. I love who you are as a human being. You are such a beautiful person. And I didn't realize, and I apologize again, I didn't realize that your mom was the impetus for all of this.
And your mom
was passing. But you know what? That's what happens when friends catch up. Sometimes you don't know everything that's happened in each other's lives, and you can pick up the conversation and carry on, and you learn a little bit more about yourself and a lot more about the other person when you listen more effectively. So I'm really grateful for the time you've given, not just me, but to our listeners who really do and care deeply about these stories of reinvention and how they too can make it through grief and through change and through challenges and through, you know, poverty and through lack of courage, all these things that we all struggle with, and reinvention is a piece of. And so I guess if you have one final thing that you'd like to say to the people listening to the podcast about reinvention, about what you found through having courage for yourself, what would it be?
What would it be? Well, when I think about reinvention, I automatically go to what we spoke about earlier, like we're going back to know where we've come from to basically think about where you want to be. But I also think about just invention on its own, like being the potter and our life being the clay. You know, we have an opportunity to invent as we reinvent. There's so much goodness in invention that typically fear will stop us from even trying. So if you can't reinvent, invent. You know what I mean? Just invent. And I want us all to rob the grave. There are a lot of books in the grave. There are songs and stories. There are recipes. There are conversations that didn't happen. There's so much in the grave. We got to die empty. And that's what reinvention is going to do for us. Have us die empty. You know, I think about Chadwick Boseman in that regard. He died empty. Empty. 43 years old. So if you can't reinvent, invent. They serve each other the same way.
Beautiful, beautiful, meaningful words. And I think the notion of living your life fully so that when you do pass, you have nothing, you've left behind the legacy and you've left behind the wisdom and the knowledge that you bring to this world and to others is the best advice possibly you could give. So thank you so very much. I love talking to you. I love reconnecting.
Me too.
Your reinvention is inspiring to me and to many, and we'll reconnect again very, very soon.
Thank you.
After listening to both her music and her journey, it's no surprise to see why Julie has been dubbed one of the 25 greatest Canadian singers ever. Her positive mindset constantly turns obstacles to opportunities for growth, and her drive is not something you want to get in the way of. Even after losing her mom, who she attributes so much of her characteristics and learning to, Julie is not letting bereavement slow her down, but rather continuing to work in honor of her. It's rare to come across someone so talented in their craft and dedicated to helping others achieve their potential. It is almost guaranteed that life will throw unforeseen circumstances your way. But if you roll with the punches and keep your headspace as positive as Julie's, you will overcome and succeed. Stay safe and stay human. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This podcast is made possible by the great folks at Venture Communications. Thanks to our engineers, writers, producers, and all the folks who work really hard to bring you these great stories of reinventions each and every week.